put in her womb and that someone would come to confession to confess it. And as a matter of fact, she wasn't even confessing it. She just mentioned it. And I said, wait a minute. What did you just say? And she said, oh, yes. She actually told me she was doing it as a ministry. And I looked at her and I said, just to dispel that thought, I said, are you being paid for this? Of course, you know, I knew she was. Like $10,000. I said, you know, the last time I looked, you know, when you get paid, that's not an om. Okay? When you get paid $10,000, banish from your mind that you're doing it from a ministry, regardless of whether or not that's a sin or not, which it is a huge sin. But I had to tell her at that time, you know what? Can you come back? And I had to go get Dr. Engelhardt's book. Stop flipping through this. You know, exactly what is surrogate motherhood? How does it work? And try to educate myself on this. This shows the importance of the republication of manuals from our bishops. We need them so that the priest can be educated on contemporary matters in order to heal the people who are falling into new and unique particular sins. Anyway, so I was mentioning that Byzantium gave this guidance to its priests. It was passed on to the Slavic world. Even in the Celtic world, there are all sorts. As a matter of fact, they were really into this. There's Irish penitentials, Frankish penitentials. And they have a great commonality until about the scholastic period in the West. And then the penitentials change, and the gravity of how they evaluate sin changes. I'm sure that Dr. Engelhardt could probably explain this to us why much better. My guess is that some of the philosophical notions that the confessors had invaded their evaluation of the gravity of certain sins. I mean, I'll give you a practical example. In the 13th century, some of these manuals began to penance masturbation greater than fornication because of the notion, the philosophical notion of what was according to nature. And while in the traditional manuals, masturbation was always viewed as much less serious than fornication, not defiling someone else, not as invasive, now fornication was seen as less than masturbation, and masturbation worse because it was an unnatural act. And even if fornication is wrong, at least it's natural. Okay, so this is an example of kind of the perversity of the change that took place in the manuals after the scholastic period. But it was consistent, east and west. A beautiful example of a penitential by a person that is so unique in the history of English bishops, St. Theodore of Canterbury. The reason I like him so much is because he, in fact, was not a Brit. He wasn't born in England. He was the first archbishop that the whole English church obeyed in the 7th century. But he had been sent to England from Rome with his monastic brother, Adrian. They came together. And before that, he was in Greece, which is where he was born. So he was a Greek who had gone to Rome. He had received his monastic formation in Greece. He went to Rome, and then he was sent to England. So here's a man who in himself embodied the whole church east and west. And he left, the only thing in writing he left, is a beautiful penitential that was given to all the priests in England to guide them through how to heal people of various sins. Very valuable, and it is published in a beautiful book called The Medieval Handbook of Penance. Now, before we leave this subject of diagnoses and prescriptions and penitentials, let me remind you about something that all those who write these penitentials usually say at the very beginning of their work. St. Basil does it. St. John the Faster does it. They write, they remind the confessor that these are objective evaluations, but that never is a confession purely objective, that you have to take the objective evaluation and apply it to a subject. The subject is unique, which means that there's never an exact penance applied to everyone just across the board. Oh, well, you did this sin, therefore, that's what you get. Page 37 says, poof, that's not how a pastor does it. That's not how a spiritual father does it, right? He takes the person into consideration, and he gives them the medicine according to their state in life. So that evaluation about how many times they've done this, what was the circumstances, becomes very important in the application of the penance. That also includes whether or not you make the penance more serious than the objective, or less serious. Let me use an example. Someone comes and confesses